Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. It's a beautiful, clear-skied autumn day here in London. Trump is in the White House and we are three blokes just chatting about dystopia. To help me do that, I'm joined by Dom Preston. He's entertainment and lifestyle editor at Tech Advisor.
Hello.
And Tamlyn McGee, a reporter at Computerworld UK.
Hiya.
My name's Scott Carey, and to get us started this morning, I'm going to ask you both what the most recent piece of sort of dystopian fiction you've come across is, read, seen TV series, played games. What's the most recent one? Dom?
I don't know really. I kind of feel in a weird place, like with all the dystopian shit going on at the moment, almost the content I'm actually engaging with is not very dystopian.
You're trying to swerve.
I don't know
dystopian.
If I'm consciously avoiding them or if it's just that it's not out there in the way it used to be. The last probably big film I saw that was obviously dystopian was Blade Runner 2049.
Was that last year?
That was early this year, I think.
Fair.
Or late last year?
Yeah.
Something like that.
It feels like quite a long time ago, but maybe that's just October, life. I don't think like it actually was that long ago.
But obviously that's sort of tapping into that existing universe.
Yeah.
Rather than doing its own thing. And the other big one, I guess, was Handmaid's Tale, which was sort of more revisiting. I'd read the book sort of 10, 15 years ago.
Nice.
And both adored and hated it.
Yeah.
In that I thought it was a phenomenal thing that made me feel absolutely awful about myself and men for a while.
I also recently reread it.
Tell uploaded it.
It does. Yeah, I recently reread it and it really holds up. I personally, for some reason, have done the exact opposite to you, Dom, and I seem to be just non-stop reading dystopian fiction at the moment.
Oh, good.
So I went on holiday. I took two books. I didn't even realise I was doing it. But I took The Plot Against America, which is Philip Roth, his fairly old novel now, about the idea of if Lindbergh had got into the White House during World War II and sort of introduced a fascist state that was in the pocket of Hitler.
That TV series.
A bit like that one. I can't remember what that was called.
The Nazi American.
Yeah, it's basically...
That's it.
Yeah. Okay, Dick.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically America under Nazism.
Which, actually...
It's terrifying.
Why did you need to read to...
It's, yeah. I just thought it would be really interesting to see like how it kind of held up, and it held up terrifyingly accurately to current events. I also read a much lighter, if that's the right word, book called Zone One by Colson Whitehead, who won the Pulitzer last year for a book called The Underground Railroad, which is very good as well. But Zone One's set in New York just after, it's basically the aftermath of a zombie invasion, and they're cleaning up the city to try and sort of resettle it. And it's very good, and it's been optioned for a TV series, but nothing's actually happened of it.
That first book, like without spoiling any of it, like were there any events in particular that you thought really contrasted with the world we live in at the moment? Like,
well, there's an amazing the best part of the book actually happens very early on. It's when the main character takes his family to Washington just after Lindbergh's been inaugurated, and it's a Jewish family because it's Roth, and they basically are just going sightseeing, but they come into contact two or three times with people who are newly kind of open about their anti-Semitism towards his family, and it's just really uncomfortable and really dark, and it kind of reminds me of what's happening in America at the moment, in terms of people kind of feeling empowered with their racism. So yeah, nice and friendly, nice and light.
Good to distraction from
good beach read.
Yeah.
What about you, Tamlin? What have you come into contact with recently?
I'm kind of similar to you, Dom. Like, I'm not really engaging with the ultra dystopian stuff. So I think in a way it's a little bit played out. Like, I mean, obviously there's loads of classics in dystopian fiction and games that borrow from it and so on and so on. But in terms of actual content that I've enjoyed, I can't think of anything recent that's been sort of like drenched in dystopia. I did watch Blade Runner 2049.
You hated it, right?
Well, that's an entire podcast.
Well, no, let's talk about it.
Well, you know, really? I mean,
you hated all of it, right?
I liked the first 5-10 minutes, which was some really interesting world building. But I thought, like, the soundtrack especially, like, jarred with me, because obviously the original's got such a great soundtrack, and this one is just like, what's his name? The soundtrack guy.
Is it Green?
I can't remember. I've actually listened to it.
Is it Johnny Greenwood?
No, I don't think so. No. He's done loads and loads of stuff.
Maybe
anyway,
Zimmer,
that's it.
It's Zimmer.
It just sounded like, you know, farts run through a distortion pedal. That, to me, was the most horrifying element of that whole dystopian world, that terrible soundtrack. In terms of, like, actual recent stuff I've watched, I guess I watched a bit of Altered Carbon, I think it was called.
Oh yeah,
I forgot about that.
It was just like...
I didn't like that much.
It was like teenage male fantasy, the TV series, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, I've been thoroughly swerving dystopian fiction, like recent stuff. It just doesn't excite me, really.
It's funny that we brought up Man in High Castle, because it, like, that was obviously pre-Trump, but it's weird how quickly that must have aged.
Man in White Castle.
Because at the Trump time, it would have been like such a bizarre concept, like such an out there concept, and now it probably is less.
Well, it's in a similar space to, they had the same sort of timing issue with Wolfenstein 2, the new game, which is sort of set in alternate history, 60s America, where the Nazis won the war.
Yeah.
And they had the same thing where they'd, you know, they'd made a Wolfenstein remake like 4 or 5 years ago, which is, you know, and then they just thought, oh, I'll do the sequel. Cool. All right. We'll set that in America. That'll be cool. Like, Nazis in the States. We can do some fun stuff with that. And then it came to release, and it released, I can't remember exactly when, but it was around, it was shortly after, I remember meeting the PR shortly after the Charlottesville stuff.
Yeah.
So they were just suddenly releasing this Nazis in America game while there were Nazis in America.
Yeah, with very good people on both sides.
The craziest thing about that was the fact that, you know, killing Nazis used to be an uncontroversial thing. That's why Wolfenstein was a classic, and Glorious Bastards and so on. This entire World War II genre of killing Nazis.
They were the staple baddie.
Yeah, and now suddenly you've got, like, idiot liberals being like, oh, well, in the free market of ideas, let's just see what the Nazis have to say. Maybe they're that bad after all. Like, yeah. Come on, no, they're bad. It's the reason they were the staple baddie. They were, like, obviously bad, you know.
Well, it's like one of my favorite horrifying things out of all this kind of stuff was some of the, like, Star Wars fandom sort of then starting to complain over the last couple of years about the suggestion that the Empire and the First Order were meant to be like the Nazis, because, well, they're the baddies, so it's not fair to suggest that these baddies are like the Nazis. Oh, and it's like, yes, because the Nazis were the fucking baddies. Jesus Christ.
There's no ambiguity about it. Darth Vader is obviously the archetype of an objective baddie. He's not supposed to be viewed in nuanced terms, is he? Like, doesn't he strangle a guy within the first 5 minutes of appearing in the first one? Like, come on.
I think that matter of timing was something that was really interesting with The Handmaid's Tale, because obviously the book is much older, but when the TV series came out, it was very much into sort of Trump's America. And I haven't watched it, but I've heard they're kind of leaning into that idea.
They didn't do a lot of that in the first season. I haven't seen the second. I've heard the second is now, because I think the first season, again, it was actually, it had that same accidental timing where the production had been started, I think, before it was, everything went full Trump. So it kind of came out in the kind of like, oh, this is way more, and then Me Too and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And all of that kind of just happened to be happening at the same time. I think season two is probably when they've been more able to write it with an awareness of Trump and Me Too and build that in. And,
well, as someone who's read the book, it seems odd that there even is a season two, but yes, I guess that gives them more scope to kind of riff on current events.
That's kind of what has put me off watching season two.
Yeah.
Season one pretty much covers the book, and I thought it was an okay adaptation of a very good book.
I should watch
it
because
I'm not interested in seeing what they do from here.
Yeah, I should watch it because I'm in love with Alexis Bledel, so I should watch everything she's in, but yeah, I've never got around to it.
I realize I also do have a more interesting answer to the recent things I've watched or played or whatever, which is that recently, but a game called Tacoma, which was by the studio who made a little game called Gone Home. And they're in a genre that's kind of disparagingly called walking simulators.
But, like Journey and all that.
Yeah, kind of same. So you're basically just walking around and exploring. In this one, you're sort of exploring a space station and you're playing the holographic recordings left behind by the crew to try and piece together what's happened. But one of the interesting things is just a lot of it is one of those, this sort of background detail about this kind of like corporate dystopia, that kind of thing. So there's lots of mentions of like this world where you like, you have like loyalty schemes as an employee. So like your savings have more value, like you're basically actually paid in this currency of the corporation you work for.
Yeah.
And thus there is more value to your money if you stay with that company. And changing jobs could actually cause you to like lose a load of money because you've lost the loyalty points.
Yeah. It's and very there's Black Mirror stuff kind of like idea.
Yeah, there's one like little bit of like article that makes reference to going to Amazon University and how, you know, if you then take your job at Amazon, your loans get paid off.
Which is not that far off.
Well, Jeff Bezos is now talking about schools, right?
Yeah.
The other day, so.
He said the child will be the customer.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you going to say something, Sammy?
Yeah, it's just I've lost it.
We'll jump to my next question, which is not the most recent, but what is your kind of favourite piece, if favourite is the right word, of dystopian fiction? So an absolute stone-cold classic.
I just remember what I was going to say. Can I say that first?
Yeah.
I feel like dystopian fiction, like I think like when you said Black Mirror, it reminded me that's probably the last dystopian genre thing I've watched from start to finish. And I feel like in terms of, if you can call it a genre,
well, it jumps around in genre, doesn't it, Black Mirror, but
essentially what's underpinning it is like dystopia,
tech,
right?
Dystopia, yeah.
I feel like it jumped the shark, and because Black Mirror got to me became like this ludicrous trope for just like Black Mirror,
yeah
it's really turned me off the whole thing. I'm like, well, you know,
I adore Black Mirror, and I think Charlie Brooke is a genius, but I do think that once you start throwing Netflix money at it and start asking them to produce 10 episodes on short turnarounds, that's not the most conducive, creative way of getting the best out of him. So some of it definitely falls a bit flatter. I'm going to go back and watch some old ones, actually, on a flight on Sunday. So
I enjoyed it. I think it's more the fact that it's so widely referenced culturally, like in conversation, like Black Mirror.
Yeah.
But then actually Black Mirror is like, just a bit like real life, but a bit worse. So it's not like things that I like. Things aren't like Black Mirror. Black Mirror's like life, just slightly worse.
Yeah, he just takes things to their dark extreme.
Because that's the whole, I mean, the whole thing, like that running joke in Black Mirror is just, what if phones, but worse?
Yes.
Exactly, yeah.
That is how like every episode seems to come about. You just look at some bit of tech and say, what if that, but worse?
Uber, but for death camps.
Yeah.
anyway.
Stone Cold Classics is my next question. I can go first if you want. I'm going to go with a video game. I think the best piece of dystopian fiction ever made is The Last of Us. I think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal game. I guess dystopia is pushing it, but it's zombie apocalypse. Basically, if anyone's not played it, you are two characters sort of working your way through this sort of wasteland world, trying to find little pockets of civilization. It's got possibly the best ending of a video game.
Fantastic.
And the second one comes out next year?
Maybe. They haven't actually said a year yet, so I suspect probably 2020.
Probably early.
But early 2020. Which at some point. It's on the way.
The emotional pull I got from that game was unlike most film, TV, media I'd experienced. I was just like blown away by it completely.
That's 100% what sets it apart for me, is the sort of connection to the characters.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that games can get, in the same way as TV shows can and films struggle, because you are with those characters for 30, 40 hours by the time you reach the end. You know, it's a long journey. You go on with them, you spend a lot of time with them. And that game does such a good job of having, it's obviously got the big dramatic story moments, but it's got so many just little beats as they're wandering around, little tiny character moments as they're just exploring.
Genuine relationship between the two characters as well. I actually put off playing that game because I play a lot of games, but I completely suck at them. And I got stuck even on easy mode early on in at one of the points where you're dodging the military police or whatever and shooting at you. And it just stressed me out too much and I just didn't play it. That was on PS3. I didn't play it until I got a PS4 years later. But I'm so glad that I did, because it was just like exceptional. Once I was over that hump, I was just like, I bowled through it. Yeah. I like, didn't do anything for an entire week, and I just played that game, and it was great.
And now that I think about it, I guess that I could argue that Metal Gear Solid is my favourite, because it's such a... because it is a very odd version of dystopia itself. But yeah, Last of Us is the one for me. What about you guys?
I mean, honourable mention to Bioshock on the gaming front. Obviously, it's kind of been played on it, in the other Bioshock games and sort of other derivative stuff since, but it does a great job of realising an interesting dystopia in a gaming setting. Kind of love the Art Deco styling and stuff like that. But actually, I'm going to go overall for me. Stolen from David Price on the team, but the Warhammer 40,000 universe, I think, is a phenomenal dystopian setting that I've adored since I was a kid. I used to play the tabletop game, spent far too much money on it for a few years, and I haven't touched any like the figurines in over a decade now, but I still have such a tremendous soft spot for the video games and books and anything, and I just realized it's because actually what I loved wasn't the figurines, it wasn't the game, it was that setting.
The universe.
Mm. This weird, horrible, futuristic setting where, I mean, in their words, there is only war. Like, it's just ultra-violent, ultra-dark. There's no clear sense of good guys and bad guys.
No.
You know, you sort of, like, as a kid, you're naturally drawn to, like, oh, the Space Marines, they're the goodies, and the Chaos Space Marines, oh, they're the baddies, and there's, it seems very clear-cut. And as you start reading in, it's like, oh, no, actually, all the good guys are religious zealots and fascists. Oh, okay, they're... right. and, yeah, it's one of those interesting bits of, like, fiction that tends to get really misinterpreted by people, and some of the sort of... Yeah, people don't always get those aspects of it, so there can be a little bit of a cult of people being like, oh, yeah, like, you know, the Emperor, like, good guy and all the all that stuff, and you sort of miss, like, no, the whole point is this is all one massive satire, like...
I feel like it's almost a shame that that universe came out of, like, that game, because I think there could be more interesting stuff done with it than, like, high street shops with, like...
Did they make a shockingly bad film recently?
No, I think maybe there's been some animated movies, but it's been one of those things where they've been very precious with the movie license. They've had talks at times, but it's never happened. And I think in a weird way, they're in a weird place that they're really, really precious about the film license, and the complete opposite with the gaming licenses, because they will hand the Warhammer game license out to any game developer that wants to make anything, it feels like.
Yeah.
There's about 10 games a year with a license, most of which are direct. And yeah, I think it is that weird thing where it's kind of culturally locked in. Like, oh, it's Warhammer. It's a very niche thing. And you have, you know, so I think a lot of people would never go near a piece of Warhammer media because they think of it as, you know, on that Dungeons and Dragons-y kind of space of uber nerd stuff.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons is sort of breaking out of that a bit, though, isn't it?
Whereas yes,
I don't think Warhammer is.
Yeah, it hasn't had that same sort of resurgence through YouTube and podcasts. I think it's because it's a bit less narrative-driven in terms of the game itself. The game is much more just...
Community should do an episode about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort it out.
What about you, Tamlin? What's your Stone Cold classic?
I'll keep it brief, because I've got three, but honestly, I'll keep it brief. the first game I played that was dystopian fiction was Syndicate Wars, which is an old PC classic where basically you're this... extrajudicial sort of intelligence agency sort of team of like an elite squad of CIA-esque soldiers, and you go around fulfilling horrible missions for them in this very dark world. And the sequel had you pitted against like a Church of Scientology-esque sect.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, CIA versus Church of Scientology in this dark world that like the sun never shines. It's just like endless cityscapes and flying cars and stuff. And that came out a long time ago. I can't remember the actual year, but I think in terms of like games, it must have been among the first to really popularize that, maybe. I don't know. It was early 90s, I think, the first one. My favorite fiction, dystopian fiction, is I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream by Harlan Ellison.
It's amazing.
R.I.P. Harlan Ellison. He phoned me up and said he had nailed my head to a coffee table once, but you know.
For the listeners that don't read extremely dark short stories about dystopian worlds, I Have a Mouth but Cannot Scream. What is it?
It's basically a supercomputer developed in a Cold War type scenario, absorbs all the other supercomputers developed in that Cold War type scenario, basically ends up dominating the world, destroys all of humanity except for, I think it's six people who it keeps alive, this thing called AM. It was called AM. I can't remember what that stands for. It keeps them alive and tortures them through endless scenarios forever and ever and ever.
Lovely.
Yeah, so it's really true.
So an AI Saw.
Yeah. Yeah, but way before the Saw films and that whole genre of, you know, torture porn and stuff. It's not like that. It's much more creative, you know, like summing up great birds to, like, flap in the faces of these, like, these tortured people. And my favourite film probably is Stalker by Tarkovsky, which is probably as much a critique on the Soviet Union at that time and his own religious leanings as it is like dystopian fiction. It's based on a book that I haven't read. I can't remember what that's called.
I don't know actually.
But apparently the film completely diverged from the book, and the author of the book, also a Soviet author, hated the film, but the film's gone on to be like a total classic. And
you should never trust authors hating movies though, because Stephen King didn't like The Shining,
so oh yeah,
you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to care.
They don't know.
So yeah, those are my three pieces of dystopian culture that I like really, really appreciate and love.
Yeah, I think just because we've already mentioned it, shouldn't discount the fact that the original Blade Runner for me is just the OG dystopian movie.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's one that I kind of almost don't want to mention because it's just such an obvious one. Just be like, oh, Blade Runner, obviously.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, Blade Runner. I also love. Again, just little details in the background. I'm a sucker for the Alien movies, but the first two Aliens just have this sense that they're in one of those sort of Blade Runner-esque, really corporate dystopias.
I do love that, actually. And, the kind of mythology around Alien was always something that I was borderline obsessed with. And I remember getting very deep down a lot of internet rabbit holes just before Prometheus came out.
Yeah,
right. Because Prometheus kind of promised to expand on a lot of that stuff. And for me, failed in its mission to do that, but yeah, what it's a big corporation, isn't it? Kind of,
Weyland-Yutani, and then so the Prometheus is the Weyland Corporation, and this is at some point in the timeline, Weyland and Yutani merge, and there's all sorts of, but yeah, so it's, you know, in the first film, it's just kind of there that they work for the company, and you know, it's sort of you know if you the whole everything goes wrong because of the company sending them to get this sample essentially, and the second one kind of leans into it a bit more because it has Burke, the kind of the company guy there. But yeah, I always like them. They're obviously not dystopian films in the sense they're not about their dystopias and they don't show them off a lot.
Yeah.
But there's always that feeling of, yeah, just you're seeing one thing that's happening in a big corporate dystopia world. It's all out there.
You get a bit more of it with the David sequence, don't you? Where David, I can't remember, is it in the most recent Alien movie where it's David at the very beginning talking to the head of the Weyland Corporation?
In the big white room with the piano and the artwork. That's the beginning of Covenant, yeah.
I've never seen Prometheus. I've only actually seen Alien 1, 2 and 4 and not 3 for some reason. That beats me why. But I think what's really interesting about that, as you say, Dom, is this sort of hidden universe and the fact that the actual struggles of the characters in the Alien films is so isolated and that's part of it.
Yeah.
And this stuff is just hinted at. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break from our sponsors and then we're going to come back.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, we're back, and going to go a little left field here, but I want to know which dystopian universe you guys would most want to live in. Dom?
So my choice is the film adaptation of The Running Man.
Yep.
Which is a Schwarzenegger classic. It's actually based on, funnily enough, a Stephen King novel, having mentioned him, though it's one of the Stephen King books he wrote under his alias, Richard Bachman. I've never read the book.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He did three or four, I think, under an alias, because I think it was that he was writing too many books and his publisher told him it would sort of dilute the market if he was releasing too many books.
It's absolutely
at the time.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, yeah, so the film is one of those sort of weird ones where it's Schwarzenegger is a guy who gets swept up into a sort of game show where you have to compete for your life. And it's basically like, what if the TV show Gladiators, but it was lethal?
Yeah. And the government made you do it.
And the government made you do it. And so it's all for sort of entertainment. And so it's all these like themed like gladiator people he has to fight. Like there's like an ice hockey themed one and all this different stuff. And they all have like these ridiculous weapons that are themed around their silly stuff. And it's Schwarzenegger just fighting his way through. And it's just that kind of like, yeah, taking that kind of reality TV game show thing and just imagining pushing it further and further and further to more and more ludicrous and violent and over the top extremes.
And this is where you want to live.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you wouldn't be bored, would you?
You would definitely not be bored.
Like, you know, if we're just going to go full on dystopian, let's at least have one where it's entertaining rather than like.
It's not 1984. You're not going to be locked in your cubicle.
I'll sit there, you know, hollering for blood, like, you know, watching as some poor fucker get torn apart by a guy in an ice hockey mask, like with LEDs all over him.
I really believe that you would. You've thought about this before.
Where would you live, Tamlin?
Well, I was going to say Wall-E, but it's a toss-up between Wall-E and Escape from L.A.
Oh, yeah.
Because
or L.A. rather than New York.
L.A. because it's got a Castro-esque figure who plays basketball, and who wouldn't love that? I mean, I'd go join up with his clique if it had me in a freaking heartbeat.
No.
The actual universe itself isn't, I guess, that different from... You know, it's like this, but slightly worse, like what I was saying about Black Mirror. But I'm in it for Castro and basketball. But Wall-E as well, because, I mean, you know, it's presented as this horrible endgame scenario where humans are robbed of agency, but they all seem so happy.
To be honest, like, okay, yeah, like sitting there now, it looks horrible. But actually, yeah, just watching a load of movies and getting fat, it could be worse.
It could be so much worse. I mean, it doesn't look great for planet Earth.
No.
True. And poor Wall-E is tormented to cleaning it up forever. But in terms of the sort of fully automated luxury communism that the people are experiencing through capitalism, strangely, it's funny that capitalism ate its own tail in that film, because they all just seem to have their needs met and they're fine and they seem happy. Wall-E.
I can't think of any that I'd particularly want to live in, but I know like all of the basically the desert scenarios are the ones that I would not want to live in. So Mad Max would drive me insane.
Yeah.
As would Dune, I think. Just being on like a desert planet would not be that much fun. I also think that whatever happens in the road would not be fun.
What about Tank Girl? They seem to have a good time in Tank Girl. I mean, it was bad.
I've actually seen Tank Girl.
Oh, really? It's fantastic.
Yeah, I really want to.
You should watch it. But I guess the basic plot is it's corporations vying for control of water, isn't it? Kind of like in Mad Max, if I remember it correctly.
Yeah.
But they've all got great haircuts and
that's good
stuff.
You'd have decent swag if you lived in the Mad Max universe.
While I'm on a naff 80s, 90s action film bent, having done Schwarzenegger, I'll do Stallone as well. So Demolition Man.
Oh, yeah.
Would be great fun. And just go to Taco Bell, do whatever they do with the seashells.
Yeah,
it's just this. Yeah, again, like weird, larger than life version, like the real world, but just everything's a bit louder and more colourful. And Sylvester Stallone is there.
Yeah, I could think of worse places to live than the world of RoboCop.
Yeah,
yeah.
That RoboCop was a satire. I think that's what a lot of people don't get about.
What people don't get about Starship Troopers sometimes, which blows my mind.
It's all Verhoeven. Verhoeven gets very, very misunderstood.
RoboCop. It's just like this horrible militarized world and completely commercial than the action hero going around blowing everyone's brains out because judicial process is no longer a thing anyone cares about, and it's all like,
yeah,
you know, money, instant gratification, the world gone to shit.
You'd yeah. be pretty well behaved though, wouldn't you, if you had a robot running around
like in Singapore. I imagine. I've never been. You've been, haven't you?
I have.
Was it like Robocop?
Nah.
Not even?
Nah.
Were you quite well behaved because of the laws and stuff?
Yeah, right? I was pretty well behaved.
So Robocop.
I wouldn't spit out gum. No. Not out of fear of a Robocop blowing your brains out. But
out of fear of being fined or arrested.
Basically.
So, not a massive leap to Robocop from Singapore, I guess. Yeah.
Fair. Taking a turn for the real world, I wanted to ask you guys what the most dystopian thing that's happened in real life this year that you've seen. We cover the technology sector, so we tend to come across sort of dystopian situations quite often. The one for me, Tamlin, I think you've got more detail on this, but Amazon put a patent in for for a cage for their employees.
Yeah, the worker cage. That I was going to say, basically everything Amazon and Jeff Bezos have done this year, culminating in the worker cage.
Yeah, basically all their patents seem to have a bit of a dystopian bent. Like even the stores, the Amazon Go stores, could be taken to like a Black Mirror-esque end game.
I love how Amazon were like, yeah, we patented it, but we didn't have any plans to use it. It was just in case. Just in case what?
That could be the beginning of a dystopian novel, couldn't it? It's like, oh yeah, we just patented all these things, and then everyone just thinks, oh, that's fine. They're not actually going to use them, but they will use them if they can.
This has been like the first year. Obviously, Amazon's been kind of shitty for a long time, but this has been the first year it's really kind of hit me.
Yeah,
I really felt like, oh, they are awful. They are really, really awful.
The PR sort of chickens have come home to roost for a lot of those companies this year.
Yeah.
With all the data stuff at Facebook.
But have they? I mean, their bottom line seems kind of all right, doesn't it?
Their bottom line's fine, yeah.
do they still use Amazon?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, well.
To buy dystopian novels.
I feel
novels.
Really guilty when I do it, though.
Well, that's the main thing, yeah. Dom. It's how we'll change the world.
I've made myself less happy.
Private guilt.
Does that help?
Yeah. Private guilt will change everything. I think, yeah, Amazon's a good shout. Like, they've been consistently evil. There's been no dip in the evil. It's just been a sort of plateau of terribleness from start to finish this year. I kind of think, though, that the world is so, like, maybe it's just awareness of it, but the world is so disastrously out of step and bizarre, it's kind of beyond satirizing, beyond fiction.
Mm.
And it makes dystopian stuff, like, less interesting to me because, like, you can just wake up and watch the morning news and Trump's done something mad, and it's like no one, even the best writer, would have expected Earth to plot this stupid course.
Was a great Charlie Brooker tweet, wasn't there, a couple of years ago when all the David Cameron had sex with a dead pig stuff came out, and that's kind of the plot of the first ever episode of Black Mirror, and he did a tweet that was like, yeah, Black Mirror was a documentary. And it's increasingly feeling that way.
That was a fantastic day on Twitter, though. I mean, possibly
one of the best.
It's only going to be surpassed when, like, I don't know, the Queen dies or something. That'd be funny.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point now where a porn star can compare the president's penis to a character from a video game and it hardly moves the needle.
Yeah, that was just a little blip.
On the kind of real-life dystopia stuff, Tamlin, I know you're working on a piece that's going up today about a new law that's working through the Lords that no one seems to pay any attention to, but which is going to kind of expand state surveillance laws.
Which is
pretty terrifying.
It's called the Overseas Production Order Bill, I think. I can't remember. I wrote it yesterday and my memory's terrible. But it's not that shocking. It's basically just that the snooper's charter is not enough. The authorities want to get information on users behind their back.
Silicon Valley companies.
From Silicon Valley more quickly. At the moment, it can take up to 12 months, and cops hate that because they want to know everything now. So they want to bring it down to 7 days. But the really mad thing is that it could be years or never. You might never know that they've been looking at your emails. I mean, I talked to a lawyer and she said she had a client who who got an alert from the American authorities last year that just said, oh, by the way, we've looked at your entire Outlook account 4 years ago. And he was like, what? You know, what? You've been reading through all of my emails.
Oh, man.
So they can already do things like that. It's just kind of calcifying it and turning it into an actual law.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit weary writing about this sort of stuff all the time. You know, everything's bad. Let's start again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
On a slightly different note, I think one of the things that stuck with me the most this year on a kind of, oh, we're heading into dystopia is specifically British. And it's just the fact that around all the sort of no deal Brexit talks, the fact that we're actually in a state where we're talking about like stockpiling food and medicine because we are potentially about to become a tiny little island with no real production and no real trade, and we're all going to starve and die and fight each other to death.
I can't believe that story. I mean, it gained some traction, but most I saw from it was like an independent article that was shared a bunch because of the clickbaity title. But shouldn't we be paying more attention to the fact that medicine's going to run out and we'll all be eating like tinned pineapple and spam?
And it'll be forever. Like a week. Like I was saying, it's not like a time scale of like, oh, we'll last like months before it runs out. It's like, no, like a week after the deal or the no deal or whatever you want to, you know, a week after that happens, we'll be out of like vital life-saving medicine. And it was a kind of weird reminder of how fragile the UK's position is and how actually terrifying.
Who needs penicillin? Those experts, what do they know about penicillin?
Yeah. Great. I'm going to end things on a more positive note, and I'm going to ask you guys what your favourite utopian fiction is, where everything is nice and flowery and everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. My favorite is, I mean, utopias are a funny one because you never have good utopian fiction that's just about everything being perfect, because that's
no, because that would just be boring. With.
I really like Ian M. Banks' culture novels. So they're set in this sort of far-flung future, and it's sort of basically a post-scarcity society, and they can you know, this huge sort of intergalactic culture. This sort of dystopian elements, because they're just, it's literally called the culture. They are a monolithic culture.
Yeah, but, I mean, all utopias are going to have elements of dystopia in them.
But, it's this interesting setting where just that, yeah, they can produce anything they need to. No one has to work. And it sort of tells you different stories of how that kind of utopia then has to interact with other societies and what happens when this utopian world brushes up against less advanced, in inverted commas, groups and what that clash is like.
Are you talking about Star Trek?
No, it obviously has a lot in common with Star Trek.
I was going to say Star Trek.
Is that yours? Yeah.
Yeah, like post-scarcity and humanity clubs together to explore the universe, and they've got, they don't interfere, they're only defensive, they don't attack. Like, great, it just reminds me of what we, well, not necessarily what we could achieve, but like that big picture thinking is so much more interesting to me than dystopian stuff, because dystopian, like I was saying, is like this but worse, whereas that kind of post-war sci-fi like Star Trek imagines a wonderful future with really interesting plot lines. What could we achieve if we weren't fighting each other? And I think that's great.
I think the culture society is almost a bit like, what if, you know, you'd let the Star Trek society keep running for a few more thousand years, and then like, you know, so it's kind of at a point where AI is running everything, so humans don't even have to step in anymore. And whereas humans and all sorts of alien species intermesh, there's sort of it's very like gender fluid. People can just switch genders and bodies and stuff whenever they want and things like that. So it, you know, but yeah, I agree. It's you can be more freeing in what you imagine in that kind of setting, rather than just look at a thing in the real world and make it more extreme.
Yeah.
I think the sort of classic sci-fi authors had that in common as well. You know, there was this real big picture thinking and exploring strange possibilities, rather than what I think is a bit lazy, which is just reverting to dystopia. It's far less interesting to me than thinking about all these crazy scenarios about what could be.
Yeah, a lot of the early Isaac Asimov has very interesting stuff like that as well.
Yeah, so my favourite is a novel called Island. By Aldous Huxley, so it's his utopian alternative to Brave New World, which is his most famous novel. It shares a lot of similarities to Brave New World, mainly a sort of penchant for psychedelic drugs, but it's much less of a police state, and it's kind of set on this idyllic Polynesian island where it's a female-run society, and it kind of blends like Western science with Eastern Buddhism.
Yeah,
everyone has a lot of oral sex and takes a lot of psychedelic drugs. It's a very good novel, actually. And I would very much recommend, seeking it out. I think, The Simpsons, skewered it in the episode where Homer goes to an island and there's like a weird sort of, like uber elite society, that kind of takes him in. So it might sort of ring some bells, from that perspective. Because Simpsons skewers everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be my one. Anything else? Great. That's enough for this week. Thank you for indulging us in a more pop culture heavy episode than usual. We'll be back again next week, probably to talk more about tech. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.